Hi there. Welcome to The Preventable, the podcast giving you a seat at the table with conversations about the intersection of alcohol, drugs, and mental health in everyday lives. Take a seat and join us.
Welcome to The Preventable. With me today is Lauren Learn Elwell, a woman who really needs no introduction, but
welcome. You're going to give it to me anyway.
I am going to give it. So radio host at KSHE, just all around good person, and breaking the fourth wall here, you're actually the voice when people listen to the podcast to set it up and to close it out.
That is right. I remember you asked me, you go, hey, will you do this? And that's funny. I have, I've been asked by a couple of people that I know, because I know you kind of personally.
Yeah.
And I've introed a lot of different podcasts. So my, and I've done it in different like flavors of myself.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, that's really, I forgot about that. I forgot that I was the intro of
My favorite part is when you go, hi there. Like, it sounds just very like you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yes, you're a radio host. I want to get into all of that, you know, with the 18 minutes or whatever that we have. But I also just think it's fascinating that not only do you play music as part of your job, but you're in a band and you sing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, music is like it for you, right? Like, have you always been just like craving music, like Casey Kasem top 40, like I was?
Or,
okay, all right.
Definitely Casey Kasem.
Yes.
So no, I grew up, my dad, my parents were divorced, and at my dad's house, he was a bachelor, and he always had a, I mean, the house was awesome because I could do anything I wanted. And he had a setup where he had his guitars, electric and acoustic, microphone, tambourine, big PA system. And he also had his vinyl, and then we had CDs and this gargantuan, you know, 80s and 90s rig where the stereo equipment goes up to the ceiling.
Oh, yeah. Like the speakers are, you know, is taller than you are.
Right. And so I grew up never afraid of a microphone. Never afraid of music, always curious about who is this a woman singing? Oh my God. And like, I specifically remember the 1998 release, I was in seventh grade maybe, of The Dance from Fleetwood Mac. It was a live album.
Oh, yep.
It's one of the best live albums ever. And I would put that on his stereo and I would get the microphone out and I would sing word to word all the Stevie and Christine McVie songs. And he would sit in the kitchen, which was like, you know, kind of away from me, and he would watch me, and like I would just sing to him, and you know, and he loved it. And so I'd never been in a band, and then about 3 years ago, a friend of mine who I met through the station who works in TV, they had a singer drop out, and he said, hey, do you want to come audition? Nobody's ever asked me to be in a band before. And so here I am now 3 years later singing lead with these three guys who've been making music longer than I've been alive, and we're having the most fun.
It seems
ever.
Like you are having like the best time. It's, like you, when you listen, here's my opinion. When I'm listening from 2 to 6, right? It seems like you're having a really good time.
I am.
You know, I know it's work. I know there's a lot more that happens behind the scenes than just being like, hey, and here's Ramblin' Man. But like, you know, okay. You clearly are having a good time on that.
Yes.
But then when I see pictures of you or see like snippets or whatever singing and just being on stage, it's like, wow, this is like, you're really having fun.
I'm only having fun. If it becomes not fun, it's over. And like, because, and for me, it's funny because the money, okay, we get paid for gigs. Great.
Sure.
People cannot persuade me with money. Like they can't be like, hey, you know, I'm like, if it's not fun, I'm not doing it. And if it's pain, it's over. Like, so, and that's kind of how I look at the band and I look at life, you know, because there's a saying that maybe you've seen this where it's like, if it's not a hell yes, it's an F no. And that's kind of my vibe.
I have not seen that, but I feel like that I'm going to get a tattoo with that or something. That's pretty great.
Yeah. That's so that in 2022, that's been kind of my mantra. And I've tried to, because a lot of my energy is outward. I don't have a lot of downtime to put energy back into me. And so, which is really strange because I don't say I'm a musician. I say I'm a performer because I go up there and I perform.
Yeah.
I never have had a singing lesson. I don't know how to read music. I don't even remember, this is so awful. I don't even remember lyrics well. I have like a problem with remembering lyrics. So I'm very no shame about it. I have my music sheets out in front of me, very analog. And if I got to read a line, I will. And I have no problem being completely real about that and myself.
So do you use singing as a form of catharsis or coping? Because if you are, And this was actually one of the questions I was going to ask, because what I have found, and this is myself included, people who are most sort of out there, mm-hmm. generally speaking, are kind of introverts and need that time to sort of rebuild and refresh. And so does music do that for you, or how do you find that? Maybe your cats? Or
definitely cats. My okay. cats are my therapy, my little baby angels. So the band for me is a great release. Like mm-hmm. we practice every Tuesday night, and I can't tell you how often I will go. We practice at my bassist Richard's house, and I mean, and we all do this. It's not just me. Each week, one of us will come in and we'll say, having a real fragile week,
mm-hmm.
and we just hit it. Or I had a thing a couple weeks ago where I came in and I told the guys, I go, I am literally in hysterics because I had something had happened. Like it was like a bunch of things that kind of mm-hmm. been building. And on my way there, I had a situation on the phone, and I literally got there and I was laughing so hard. I was crying, but I was so angry. It was yep. one of those days. And I said, I just really need to belt this out tonight. And I'll tell you, like we practice for 2 hours. And at the end of it, I am so just drained in the best way possible. But I wouldn't say that music is necessarily the thing that fills me back up.
Mm.
Being quiet mm-hmm. fills me up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking all the time. I'm listening to music all the time. I really enjoy, I love reading. I love sleeping.
Same. You know. I think that should be considered a hobby.
Absolutely. Or it should be more prioritized in health.
Yes,
right?
That's true.
Sleeping and getting that REM cycle sleep is so important. And I have a Fitbit and I wear that to see what my, you know, how well I'm sleeping. And I, you know, I don't take anything to sleep, maybe a melatonin every now and then. But I'm very much like, especially through the pandemic, people were saying that dreams became more vivid.
Yes.
I had always had pretty vivid dreams, and then over the last couple years now, my dreams have become like completely otherworldly and a great escape, which I talked to my therapist about, because mm-hmm. I said, I'm having a thing, this is a year ago, I said, I'm having a thing where I really can't wait to go to bed at night, and I really can't wait to kind of finish what I started the night before in these amazing, whimsical, vivid, colorful,
yeah.
interesting dreams. And I said, I'm kind of like, you know, I was kind of going through like about a depression. And I said, is this bad? Like that I'm like really loving to be asleep a lot. And she's like, well, as long as you're not like using or, you know, long as you're naturally just falling asleep, like there's nothing wrong with that. And it's wonderful that you're having great sleep. And that's where I can finally let go.
I mean, you said so much in what you just said, and two things that I want to call out. You gave a shout out to your therapist, which I often do on this podcast.
Hey, girl.
Because I think therapist is
it's so important.
My counselor is like one of my BFFs. Aww. Not really. That would be
that
weird,
would be ethically wrong. Yes.
Right. But you know what I mean. Like
yeah, yeah.
I feel like she is my person.
That's good.
But then also, I mean, you did mention depression. And mm-hmm. I think that is one of the things that I so appreciate about you is that, and a lot of on-air personalities here, no, I shouldn't have said that. A lot of radio hosts here at Hubbard is that you are open about your mental health struggles, challenges. You know, wow, I'm having a really fragile day.
Yeah.
I mean, even to say that and to be able to articulate that, I think is huge.
Definitely.
Do you recognize the platform that you have and choose to use it for good? Or did it sort of like, was it an accident where you were like, oh, wow, I really could be helping? Or how did that come about? Because I can imagine it would be intimidating maybe at first.
Mm-hmm. I'm very, very conscious of the platform I have. I do a really cognizant job at, I don't overshare.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of people doing that. It's just not my thing. I don't judge. That is cathartic for others.
Yeah,
fabulous.
Yeah.
I look at myself as a person, and this could be a little ego sounding. I think people come to me to not have more added onto their plate.
Yeah.
I think people come to me to escape a little bit more, or to know they're not alone, or to, if they're like, I can't tell you how many people in this building alone will pop into my studio when they're having a bad day and confide in me deep things that they need help with.
Yep.
And I'm not like, and I always try to give advice, but I also try to delegate them to better routes. But I think I've always been a I've always been a receiver.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been somebody who, if somebody is having a bad day, it doesn't matter who you are, and you gotta lay into me about that. Like I had an event a couple weeks ago. I was in a little town in Illinois. There was like a fall festival happening, and this guy came up to me. He had just become diagnosed with ALS. So he was in a wheelchair.
Oh my goodness!
And he came up. I'd never met him before. But a month prior, his buddy had reached out to me and said, hey, we're doing a fundraiser for him. Would you mind filming a little video so we can play it? And I was like, absolutely. At my house, no makeup, like, hey, you know, I think his name was Bill, maybe. I was like, hey, Bill, it's your girlfriend, Lauren, you know, blah, blah. And anyway, he and his wife came out to the event to say thank you.
Oh, wow.
And as I met him, and I should have remembered his name, as I'm meeting him, you know, here he is diagnosed with this terrifying disease. And he still had some motor skills, and he reminded me who he, you know, you did this thing for me, and I just wanted to say thank you. And I grabbed him, and I was like, "Don't stop living your life." And I go, "I know you're scared as hell right now, but do not stop enjoying what life has to offer you." And he started crying, and I got upset, but I wanted to tell, like, because I immediately go into an empathy zone with people.
Yeah.
Especially if you haven't gone through something like that, but you can imagine how scary that has to be. And so I don't know, people come, it's weird. It's like I'll meet strangers who tell me the deepest, darkest little things about themselves. And it's almost
because
like...
Because they think they know you.
Well, yeah, I guess that is what it is.
And right? So, I mean, they think you're a friend.
Yeah, but it's so weird.
Oh, it's so weird.
And
it would be so weird.
And I have to set boundaries because for a good portion of, I mean, I've been on the air full time now for 10 years. And I had to start setting boundaries physically, mentally, psychologically, because I was taking on a lot of the things that aren't mine. And so this last July, I think it was, my husband and I, we went to a meditation retreat for the first time. It was so amazing.
Stop it.
It was in Southwest Missouri. Incredible place. And I'd been wanting to go there for a while, and it's literally in the boonies, and it's this gorgeous place that you go and you, and I had a one-on-one with one of the owners, who's this very spiritual, fabulous man. And he and I had a one-on-one, and I walked out of there, and the thing that I got from it, he says, you need to learn how to say, this is not mine. And it was like profound, because when you have empathy, or you're a receiver, or you're just, you freaking love people and you want to help people, and I do, you start to not help yourself anymore and you take on all the stuff of others. And so I literally, that has been my mantra since meeting this man, was this is not mine. Some things are mine, some things aren't mine. So that's, I can still have a heart for people, but then I can let go of it as well and just move on.
Whoa. Now that might actually be my tattoo. This is not mine. It is powerful because, you know, you want to help, right? And you want to listen and fix. I'm a fixer. We've talked about this before. But there's only so much you can fix.
Right.
Right. And so how do you set the boundaries without feeling like cold-hearted?
Yes.
But people do think that you're their friend because they hear you every day, right? And
right.
Then, you know, sometimes twice a day they hear you on Mondays, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Shout out to metal.
Metalheads everywhere, yes, Monday Night Metal.
That's right. But they feel like they know you and that they can unload on you. And that might be very good for them, but it's very heavy for you.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It can be a lot. And, you know, you got to kind of reserve your core, who you'll always kind of bend over backwards for, and let them kind of train run over you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it's like less than five people in my life that I'll always lay down, just be like, you know, give me everything you got.
Right. Your inner circle.
Right. But yeah, it's like for a lot of others, I mean, it would just be impossible to give so much of yourself up for others that way.
Okay. So I'm going to switch gears slightly. And this is less about asking your opinion and just more about if you've noticed the same thing too. You know, for years, decades really, rock and roll has been sort of synonymous with like partying, right?
And sex, drugs, and rock and roll,
right? And there's been a lot of premature deaths as a result of drugs or suicide, probably because of the years of unresolved trauma and all of that stuff. And I mean, we could sit here and list all of the famous musicians that have passed away. We're not going to do that. But what I wanted to know if you've noticed is that there does seem to be more musicians talking about their recovery or their sobriety or their mental health. Like, I think even just more most recently about Dave Grohl, who, you know, has talked about the fact that he was using way too much caffeine and almost had a freaking heart attack.
Yeah.
And then about the example that he wants to be for his daughter, and now dealing with like such like unimaginable sadness. And he has been very open about the fact that like he is struggling, right? Mm-hmm. And he needs to make sure that he's doing what he needs to do to put his oxygen mask on first.
Yeah.
Do you see that evolution too? I mean, I'm heartened by that, you know, evolution where musicians can sort of show a softer side.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you've seen too?
Yeah, I think with age, people are softening up. I think that the death of Taylor Hawkins, and I think there was fentanyl involved with that.
Is what it seems like.
What it seems like.
Based on the toxicology reports. And of course, there's all these people that are speculating, and we encourage people like, let's remember there's a human being attached there and a whole family.
Yeah. And it's to me that, I mean, that'll be one death of a person that I've seen in concert so many times that I felt like I knew. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so weird, but, you know, it's such a shame. And if we want to talk about Dave Grohl specifically with his career, you know, he goes from being in one of the most legendary alternative grunge bands in the 90s to, you know, only having it for 3-4 years. Mm. Kurt, you know, dies by suicide, which is devastating in itself. Cut to Dave decides to go out on a limb and create this strange band where he does all the music behind it. Mm. And then it blows up to be even, you know, I would argue that Foo Fighters, it obviously had more longevity than Nirvana. And I think it reached more people than Nirvana did. And I think it will be a longer band that will, you know, when we're all gone, I think Nirvana and the Foo Fighters will be bands that people know about. But yeah. I think the Foo Fighters just had such a longer catalog and
totally
just reached different,
more like mainstream,
yeah,
kind
mainstream,
of too. Like
for
Nirvana,
sure,
for a lot of people has become like a cool t-shirt to wear.
Yeah.
And I'm not dismissing, you know, the musicality and the talent, but it's, I mean, it felt very real when you were living through Kurt's passing, but then also there are generations now that like just wear the t-shirt.
Right. They don't really get that.
Right.
So I think
the catalog is bigger with Foo.
Dave, I think mourning Kurt Cobain and then picking up and having this kind of second chance at life or music, and then now losing Taylor Hawkins, who was, from what I understand, like one of the most happy and lovely human beings, just full of light and life. And my belief with his death is that it was accidental.
Mm-hmm. Which is the case a lot of times.
Yeah.
I mean, most people
it's
do
so
not
scary.
Have a death wish.
No. And I think, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know, I think fentanyl being in so many drugs.
That's right.
And to me, and I have a great history with drug use from my high school days and early college, and you could not pay me right now to go out on the street and get anything, like literally anything.
Not coke, not even weed, for real.
No, it's very strange. And especially with weed being more legalized,
yep,
and it's a little bit more streamlined. Like, and to me, I'm just so scared. And I think, and again, it comes with like age and wisdom. You're going like, ugh. You know, I did a lot of dumb things when I was in high school. I would not do those dumb things now. You know,
especially because the world has changed. I mean, the drug supply has totally changed.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's just a different, and everybody says that they get sold. It's like, it's just a different world. But I really just think that based on rock stars alone that I've watched die at the accidental overdose of drugs in the last like 10 years.
Yep.
It scares the crap out of
totally.
Me. And it scares me for people in my life that I know who, possibly do still have substance mm-hmm. use disorders and whatnot. And so
we've really evolved as an organization. You know, we used to be very focused on prevention,
mm-hmm.
prevention. And that is still a gigantic part of what we do.
Sure.
But we also know we have to keep people alive, right? And so we have been distributing fentanyl test strips.
Oh, that's great.
To make sure that if people are using drugs, so, that they can test
their
drugs and make sure
that.
That they're not going to die.
Right.
Because most of the time, that's not what you're looking for,
yeah.
right? You might be looking for a release or an escape or, you know,
experimentation.
Whatever. Sure, but you're not, I mean, you want to wake up tomorrow.
Right.
So but the evolution, I think, of drugs and the deadly nature of them, and at the same time, musicians that are really saying, like, wow, like, I'm really prioritizing my mental health. I'm talking to a therapist. Like, I'm doing meditation. I'm doing all of these
yeah.
things that I used to maybe think were lame, but, like, are actually helping me survive.
Yes.
Yeah.
I started reading literally last night. There's a book with His Holiness Dalai Lama and the Archbishop of South Africa, Desmond Tutu.
Yes.
And they wrote a book together many years ago. And my husband actually read it. It's called The Book of Joy. And I started it last night. And it's, I mean, already I'm maybe 22 pages in, and, like, it's an incredible book. I'm like, I can't believe it's taking me this long to read it. But they're talking about the practices of meditation and how the Dalai Lama, like, gets up at 3 a.m. every day, and he sits and he meditates and he, you know, prays. And, like, the Archbishop Tutu was saying, like, you know, he gets up at 6 and he does, like, maybe 6 hours of
Whoa.
Prayer and whatnot. And obviously those are the most holy extremism
sure, sure.
of those two things. But, like, I think that there is something to be said about practicing stillness. And, like I was saying, like,
mm-hmm.
I find myself coming back to myself through silence and through, like, just thinking.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Like, we're all so busy and we work so hard. And, I mean, I know the whole term quiet quitting is a thing right now. Like, I don't know anything about that. Like, because I am loudly working. I am loudly working overtime and, like, loving it. And, like, I really don't have, I mean, seriously, I could go, it's a whole nother podcast, but that stillness and finding your center is so important. Just even if you don't have a substance use problem, like, for your own mental state, it's so important.
Yep.
And so, if swinging back to you'd ask about my platform use and stuff of talking about mental health, I want to be an example of honesty and hope, and I don't want to add more stress or negativity to people, but I also don't want to be, like, fake and
yep.
only positive. Like, I have bad days. I mean, and people know, like, I mean, I'll have days where I come on the show and I'm like, I am really pissed, and you guys, we're going to start the show off with some Slayer and, like, hold on to your butts. So it's, you know, but it's, there's something therapeutic about
yep.
that release as well, right? So there's stillness and then there's release. And it's like, you have to have a great balance of those in your world, I think.
Well, I just, on behalf of the listeners and the people who don't listen to you, but maybe are tuning into this and are like, hey, I really need to tune in. Thank you for using your platform for
good. You're
welcome. Really, it's nice to see/hear a celebrity, I mean, take that word. I mean, that probably feels weird, but a celebrity, like, using their voice for good. So appreciate you.
Thank you.
Now get back to work.
All right, I will. Thanks, Nicole.
If you liked what you heard today, please consider rating, reviewing, and subscribing to The Preventable.
Thanks for joining us at The Preventable, brought to you ad-free by PreventEd. PreventEd works to reduce or prevent the harms of alcohol and other drug use through education, intervention, and advocacy. Please visit their website at PreventEd.org. Like what you heard? Rate, review, and subscribe to stay up to date with what we are serving on The Preventable.